The Jews in the 10th century CE, inspired by this biblical passage, embraced the Mount of Olives as a site for prayer because for them it embodied a symbol of what the rabbis termed Shechinah Begaluta, the divine presence in exile with his people. They gathered on the Mount, praying to God and standing with God, who himself, as it were, yearned to return with his people to the temple in Jerusalem. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 126, The Other Mountain. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Let us speak again of the Mount of Olives, yesteryear and today. During the age of the Second Temple, there was, according to the Mishnah, a bridge, or as some translate it, a ramp, emerging from the eastern end of the Temple Mount, spanning part of the Kidron Valley, and connecting Mount Moriah to the Mount of Olives across the gap. The ramp reflected an interesting combination of halachic concern and architectural ingenuity. During this period, the Mount of Olives was the site of the ritual of the red heifer, whose ashes were utilized in the production of the ritual water that was essential for providing purification to those who had come in contact with graves, so that these individuals purifying themselves could enter the temple area once again. Of course, there is nothing wrong, religiously, with experiencing or being near grave sites or those who have passed away. The burial of a loved one is considered one of the greatest mitzvot in existence. But following contact with the dead or with the grave, purification was required for those entering the temple. The red heifer ritual was to be performed outside the temple, but in view of it, and the Mount of Olives, of course, provides just such a magnificent view. At the time of the Second Temple period, there were no graves on the mount itself, and the one bringing the heifer from the temple to the Mount of Olives had to be sure not to come in contact with grave sites. Yet, as the heifer was taken from the temple toward the Mount of Olives, the concern was that there may be unknown graves in the Kidron Valley below, whose airspace would render impurity to those escorting the heifer. The ramp or bridge was therefore created in an interesting way. In the words of the Mishnah, kippin al gabe kippin, arches on top of arches, which according to Jewish law created a sort of halachic barrier for the impurity, so that the distance between the two mountains could be bridged, with the purity of those traversing the distance protected, and the ritual that would undo the impurity of death could be performed. And this in the end is symbolically sublime, as the Mount of Olives, ultimately for Jews, came to embody the truest bridge, one which reflected how the Jewish people defeated death itself. We have seen how under the Umayyads, Judaism was renewed in Jerusalem. We have discussed how Jewish prayer seems to have taken place first on the Mount itself, and then elsewhere in the city. The Umayyads were followed by the Abbasids, who ruled the Holy Land from Baghdad beginning in the year 750. They, in turn, were succeeded by the Fatimids in 969, ruling from Egypt. And, as Simon Montefiore summarizes, at the time, quote, the Jews in Jerusalem were divided, poor and desperate, while their Egyptian brethren flourished under the Fatimids. They started to provide the doctors for the caliphs of Cairo. These were more than just royal physicians. They tended to be scholar merchants who became influential courtiers and were usually appointed chief of the Jews of the Fatimid Empire, a post known as the Nagid, the prince. We will speak more about this fascinating position and its place in the history of Jerusalem and its Jews. For now, we will speak of the poverty and desperation in the Jewish community during this period. This is reflected in a fascinating letter from Jerusalem from the 10th century, a letter asking for support from diaspora Jewry. And what this letter also reveals is that while presumably Jerusalem's Jews were continuing to pray in what was called Hama'arah, the cave, the synagogue created inside the walls of the Temple Mount, another place of Jewish prayer that developed was on the Mount of Olives itself. The multi-faith collection of writings about Jerusalem over the ages, collected by Professor F.E. Peters, provides us with a text in which portions of this letter are translated. The letter references both the difficult relationship between the rabbinic Jewish community and Jerusalem's rulers, as well as the tension between the rabbinic Jews and the Karaite community. Here is the text that Peters gives us. We must pay close attention to its words. Quote, greetings to you from the faithful Lord, the Eternal City, and from the head of Zion's yeshivas, from the city in which the 71 members of the Sanhedrin sat with their students before them, the city which is now widowed, orphaned, deserted, and impoverished with its few scholars. Many competitors and rebels have arisen, yet it yearns for the day when the all-merciful Lord will redeem it. We, the rabbinite community, a pitiful assembly, living in the vicinity of the temple site, regret to inform you that we are constantly harassed by those foreigners who overrun the temple grounds. We pray, How long, O Lord, shall the adversary reproach? Shall the adversary blaspheme your name forever? Our sole comfort shall be when we are once again permitted to walk freely about its gates, to prostrate ourselves in prayer for Jerusalem's total liberation, with its temple restored. Yes, there is a synagogue on the Mount of Olives, to which our Jewish confreres gather during the month of Tishrei. There they weep upon its stones, roll in its dust, encircle its walls, and pray. It was God's will that we found favor with the Ishmaelite rulers. At the time of their invasion and conquest of Palestine from the Edomites, the Arabs came to Jerusalem and some Jews showed them the location of the temple. This group of Jews has lived among them ever since. The Jews agreed to keep the site clear of refuse, in return for which they were granted the privilege of praying at its gates. They then also purchased the Mount of Olives, where the Shekhinah is said to have rested, as we read in Ezekiel 11:23, "The glory of God went up from the midst of the city and stood upon the mountain which is on the east side of the city." Here we worship on holy days facing the Lord's temple, especially on Hoshana Rabbah. We entreat the Lord's blessing for all of Israel, wherever they might reside. All who remember Jerusalem will merit a share in its joy. Everyone can partake of it by supporting Jerusalem's residents. Life here is extremely hard, food is scarce, and opportunities for work very limited. Yet our wicked neighbors exact exorbitant taxes and other fees. Were we not to pay them, we would be denied the right to pray on Mount Olivet. These intolerable levies and the necessary frequent bribes compel us to borrow money at high rates of interest in order to avoid imprisonment or expulsion. Help us, save us, redeem us. It is for your benefit too, for we pray for your welfare. End quote. This is the letter, one pleading for help, describing a desperate hold in the city maintained by rabbinic Jews in the face of their poverty and trials. The letter is unpacked by F.E. Peters, who tells us that, quote, "As the letter indicates, the Mount of Olives had become the chief place of Jewish public prayer in Jerusalem. It was there, too, that was held the great annual assembly during the feast of Hoshana Rabbah, the last day of the Sukkot festival. Whereas on this day during the period of the temple, the community had circled the great altar before the sanctuary. Now, under the Fatimid dispensation, they circled the Mount of Olives seven times with song and prayer. On that same day, the Gaon of the Jerusalem Yeshiva made public proclamation concerning the dates of the new moons, the festivals, and the intercalation of the calendar." End quote. Peters has it exactly correct, but more needs to be unpacked about this letter. As we have seen in earlier episodes, and as Peters references, the Sukkot celebrations mark the most joyous moments in Jerusalem when the temple stood. And the seventh day of Sukkot, Hoshana Rabbah, marked the moment when the altar on the Temple Mount was circled seven times, as Jews asked, "Hoshana, Hoshiana, please God, save us. It is to your salvation, God, that we look," reminding themselves thereby, even at the moment when, during the harvest festival, the silos of the Holy Land were overflowing and prosperity was everywhere, that it was ultimately to God that they turned. And here, in the 10th century CE, the Jews gathered not in the temple, but close, very close, with a view of the site where that joyous celebration once occurred. But when they said, "Hoshana, save us, please, O Lord," their plea was filled with pain. They marked Sukkot and the month of Tishrei, the month and holiday in which Solomon celebrated and inaugurated his temple. But these Jews were barred from the Temple Mount, except for the fact that, as the letter further informs us, they maintained the privilege of praying at the gates of the Temple Mount in return for cleaning the mount. And there is, we are further informed, another reason why the Jews took to praying on the Mount of Olives, why they would pay dearly in funds for praying on the Mount of Olives. And this reason is biblical. What the letter cites is not the description of the prophet Zechariah, in which the end of days unfolds on the Mount of Olives. That verse in Zechariah inspired the choice of countless Jews to be buried on that site. But what this letter references is another passage. In the first part of Ezekiel, a vision is experienced by the prophet as God prepares for the destruction of the temple. God lifts his presence from the temple and moves eastward before taking Ezekiel in the vision to Babylon. Ezekiel describes what he saw. "Then did the cherubims lift up their wings, and the wheels beside them, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them above. And the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city and stood upon the mountain which is on the east side of the city. Afterwards the Spirit took me up and brought me in a vision by the Spirit of God into Chaldea to them of the captivity." The mountain which is on the east side of the city, that of course is the Mount of Olives. Thus the Jews in the 10th century CE, inspired by this biblical passage, embraced the Mount of Olives as a site for prayer because for them it embodied a symbol of what the rabbis termed Shekhinah Begaluta, the divine presence in exile with his people. They gathered on the mount, praying to God and standing with God, who himself, as it were, yearned to return with his people to the temple in Jerusalem. As we read this letter, we realize that once Jews went from the temple to the mount, bridging the two during the Second Temple period. While in the 10th century, Jews stood on the Mount of Olives, bridging with their hearts that mountain and Moriah, remembering all that had taken place in Jerusalem and longing for its return. And then, at that moment, just as once on the Mount of Olives a ritual was performed that undid the impurity of death, those Jews in the 10th century, by binding themselves to Jerusalem, took their place in an immortal people. Just recently, the Jewish community on the Mount of Olives, known as Ma'ale Zeitim, inaugurated a synagogue, the first permanent synagogue there in many, many years. Jews that stand on the Mount of Olives today still look toward a Temple Mount where Jews are unable to celebrate Hoshana Rabbah. But of course, they look out at a Jerusalem that has been totally transformed. A Jewish Jerusalem. A Jerusalem to which Jews have returned. And Jews did return because they kept faith with the longing of the Jews that prayed on the Mount of Olives once. Jews whose prayers are now echoed there today as another bridge is created between past and present and ultimately unto eternity. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.